Kunjal Vihari Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivara Dhari Gopi Jana Vallabha Dhari Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivara Dhari Yashoda Nandana Vraja Janaranjana Haranandana Yashoda Nandana Vraja Janaranjana Jamuna Tira Vanachari Tira Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Radha Madhava Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Radha Madhava Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivara Dhari Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivara Dhari Yashoda Nandana Vraja Janaranjana Yashoda Nandana Vraja Janaranjana Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Radha Madhava Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Parivrajakacharya Stodara Satsi Srimadhi Si Bhakti Vedanta Swaman Prabhupada Ki Jai Yes, Confounder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Parivrajakacharya Stodara Satsi Srimadhi Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasati Thakur Ki Jai Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai Namacharya Sita Haridas Thakur Ki Jai Prem Sekhul Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhunitananda Sri Deita Gradhar Sri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gaur Gopinatha Shamakunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai Mayapur Dham Ki Jai Jagannath Swami Ki Jai Gangamayi Ki Jai Jamunamayi Ki Jai Tulsi Devi ki jai, Bhakti Devi ki jai, Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda ki jai. All glories of the assembled devotees. Gaur, Prema, Nandi, Hari, Hari Bol. Hare Krishna. So, we're going to chant that famous verse. I hope it's famous enough so that people know it. From Bhagavad Gita, as it is by Srila Prabhupada. So, please repeat, Tad Vidhi Pranipatena Pariprasnena Sevaya Upadekshanti Jnanam Jnaninas Tattva Darshinaha Tad Vidhi Pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninastattvadarshinah tadviddhi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninastattvadarshinah. Tadvidhi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninastattvadarshinah. Tadvidhi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninastattvadarshinah. Tadvidhi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninastattvadarshinah. So, ladies, don't all chant at once. Anyone? Tadvidhi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninastattvadarshinah. Tadvidhi pranipatena upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninastattvadarshinah. You're entitled to one more slot? No? Okay. So, Prabhupada's translation for this verse, just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master, inquire from him submissively, render service to him. The self-realized souls can impart knowledge unto you because they have seen the truth. So, Prabhupada's purport. The path of spiritual realization. Is that too loud? Am I too close to the microphone? No? It's okay? That's what? That's fine. It's fine. Everyone seems to be happy. The path of spiritual realization is undoubtedly difficult, as some of you may suspect, if you've been practicing Krishna consciousness for a while. The Lord therefore advises us to approach a bona fide spiritual master in the line of disciplic succession from the Lord himself. No one can be a bona fide spiritual master without following this principle of disciplic succession. The Lord is the original spiritual master, and a person in the disciplic succession can convey the message of the Lord as it is to his disciple. No one can be spiritually realized by manufacturing his own process, as is the fashion of the foolish pretenders. The Bhagavatam says, Dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. The path of religion is directly enunciated by the Lord. Therefore, mental speculation or dry arguments cannot help lead one to the right path. Nor by independent study of books of knowledge can one progress in spiritual life. One has to approach a bona fide spiritual master to receive the knowledge. Such a spiritual master should be accepted in full surrender, and one should serve the spiritual master like a menial servant without false prestige. That can be a problem, because actually we're all full of false prestige, so what do we do with it? Anyway, we'll talk more about that later. So satisfaction of the self-realized spiritual master is the secret of advancement in spiritual life. Inquiries and submission constitute the proper combination for spiritual understanding. Unless there is submission and service, inquiries from the learned spiritual master will not be effective. One must be able to pass the test of the spiritual master, and when the guru sees the genuine desire of the disciple, he automatically blesses the disciple with genuine spiritual understanding. In this verse, both blind following and absurd inquiries are condemned. Not only should one hear submissively from the spiritual master, but one must also get a clear understanding from him in submission and service and inquiries. A bona fide spiritual master is by nature very kind toward the disciple. Therefore, when the student is submissive and is always ready to render some service, the reciprocation of knowledge and inquiries becomes perfect. Prabhupada ki jai. Of course, today is the appearance day of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Prabhupada. So, we'll also meditate upon him. I was with Prabhupada in 1976 in Mayapur, Sridhar Mayapur, on this day. And Prabhupada spoke on the occasion of his guru's appearance day. And he didn't only tell anecdotes, he mostly taught philosophy. So, anyway, let's look at this verse. I will start with the word, or the term, bona fide, which has come to mean... No problem. I'm sure you didn't mean to cough. Which has come to mean authentic. Authentic, genuine, a bona fide spiritual master. What the word literally means is bona fide. It's Latin. It means good faith. It literally means good faith, a good faith spiritual master. So to act in good faith, for example, if let's say you pose yourself as a doctor, but you're not really a trained, certified doctor, that's not acting in good faith because you're not following the rules. You're not... So to pose oneself as a teacher, if one is... Of course, vanity can wonderfully compensate for the lack of anything in a person's mind. So there are people who are not bona fide gurus in the sense that they're not authentic or they're not really qualified, but in their own minds they are enlightened. The mind can play tricks on one. One of the words for material desire, material aspiration in Sanskrit is manorata. Literally the mind vehicle, the mind car. So you get on this mental hot rod, this mental car, and it takes you all over the place. Well, everywhere except where you're supposed to be. So this mental car that can also take us to this fantasy world in which... Let's say I'm an enlightened soul when I'm not. And that's actually become a very popular fantasy, not only in India now, but of course, thanks to the glorious New Age movement, it's also become a very prominent feature of Western culture. This type of, where one imagines oneself to be enlightened. Now, some people are outright charlatans and scoundrels, people who exploit their followers sexually and financially. They're sort of, they're just obviously scoundrels and rascals. There are other people who are not simply cheaters in that sense, but consider themselves to be enlightened. For example, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that satat sanjayate jnanam, something like that, maybe paraphrasing there, but from knowledge comes, from goodness, from the mode of goodness comes knowledge. So there's a whole class of people who are vegetarian and perhaps do not believe in sexual promiscuity and don't take drugs and so on. And therefore, according to the science of the Bhagavad Gita, in fact, do experience what you would call wisdom. Wisdom. A word which actually comes from the word Veda, you may be interested to know. But anyway... The whiz, anyway, vid. So, German wissen, to know. Wissen, if you pronounce the W. Anyway, from Veda. So they have some wisdom, but they become attached to this wisdom. Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita that there is a booby trap, which those of you who are not Native American speakers may not understand what a booby trap is. Booby trap is a trick, a trap, which is their armadilya. So that Krishna says in the Gita, tasmat satam nirmalatvat, precisely because the mode of goodness is more pure than the other modes of nature, prakashakam, it's enlightening. Krishna says the material mode of goodness is prakashakam. It's enlightening, literally in the sense that it brings light, not in the sense that it is the final dramatic experience of the highest truth. Not that sense of enlightening. Illuminating. The mode of goodness is illuminating, literally, because the word kasha in Sanskrit means light. So prakashakam, illuminating. And anamayam, which means literally not corrupted or not diseased. In other words, the mode of goodness is relatively more pure. But therefore, sukha sangena badnati, you become attached to, or it's in the active sense, that the mode of goodness binds you. You become attached to that sense of happiness that comes from being a little better. For example, let's say you're very sick, and you don't feel like eating, you don't feel like doing anything, you don't feel like running around the block. You're just sick. And then you start to get better. So as you start to get better, you think, hey, I've been cooped up, I've been inside too long, I haven't eaten any good prasadam in so long, I haven't run around the block and danced in kirtan in so long. And so that's why people get relapses. Because if you've been sick and then you start to get better, you feel great even though you're really not perfectly better yet. And by one becomes attached that I feel better, and then you get a relapse. And that's something like what happens in spiritual life also. That's what Krishna is talking about. As people start to come into the mode of goodness, they really feel better. They are better. They're healthier as people. And they understand more. There's more wisdom. There's more happiness. And therefore you think, hey, I feel great, and therefore I can take chances, and then people have a relapse. So this is what Krishna is talking about. Now, there are some people in that category who are feeling good because they're coming to the mode of goodness, and they therefore think they're ready to put their name and phone number into the Southern California Guru phone book, which you can pick up at the Bodhi Tree bookstore and other outlets. So anyway, here Krishna is talking about a bona fide spiritual master. So let's look at this, at the Sanskrit of this verse very carefully to see what Krishna, and really, which Prabhupada recommended, by the way. That's why Prabhupada put the Sanskrit into the books, so that we could really go into it. So, the first thing Krishna says, first of all, it's the imperative, which in Sanskrit is just English, just try to learn the truth. The Sanskrit is very, it's just one word, vidhi, or actually two words, vidhi, tad vidhi. Know that. Know. K-N-O-W. Know that. Learn that. Understand it. It's just the direct command, which is softened somewhat in the English by words like just and try to. But actually, in the Sanskrit, it's just the direct command. Know it. Tadvidhi pranipati. Now, what's interesting is that if someone just comes up to you and says, understand it, you might say, well, understand what? So, the word that here is, this verse, 434, occurs within at the end of a paragraph, or at the end of a certain section of the Bhagavad Gita, which is found in chapter 4. And the topic is sacrifice, or yajna, or jagga, or yajna, or there are many pronunciations, because I guess even in ancient times, J-N was not the easiest thing to pronounce. So anyway, so in India they kind of pronounce it non-phonetically, yajna literally. So, sacrifice. Krishna explains, I'm going to go very briefly over what Krishna is talking about. When he says, learn that. He's talking about sacrifice. Now, the importance of sacrifice to us is explained very clearly in chapter 3 of the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna says that sacrifice is the only loophole, it's the only way out of karma bondage, karma bandha. Krishna says in the third chapter that yagyartha karmano and yatra loko yam karma bandha. Literally, this world is bondage. That's literally what Krishna says. This world is bondage. It is the bondage of karma, except for activity which is dedicated to sacrifice or to Vishnu, since yajna is the name of Vishnu. So, it's the only way of liberation. There is no other method of liberation except sacrifice. Now, for example, Krishna talks at the end of the Gita in chapter 18 of jnana yajna, the sacrifice of knowledge. Or he talks, so even if one tries to get liberated by being real smart, by studying and trying to understand, or if one tries to be liberated by other means, it's still sacrifice, just like Sankirtan is called the sacrifice for this age. So, according to the Bhagavad Gita, there is no other way to get liberated from this mess that we're in, of birth, death, old age, and disease, and always being in anxiety. You know, everyone knows what they go through in this world. So, the only way out of this is sacrifice. Which means, the whole problem is that we do things, and because every action has a reaction, when you do something in this world, something happens. It's like, when I speak, something happens. Namely, sound comes out, and other people hear it. If you walk down the street, something happens. You're exerting pressure on the street. Your body's moving. I mean, you end up somewhere that you weren't before you start walking. So it's just the nature of the world, as Newton noticed, that everything that anyone does produces a reaction. Now the question is, what do you do with it? What kind of reactions should you try to produce? And once you produce them, what do you do with them? That's the big... So, Krishna explains in the Gita, you take those actions, those fruits, and you give them to me. And get your sweaty little hands off them. So, now in the material world, we discover very early that by doing certain things, we enjoy and other things cause suffering. Certain sensations of the body. Like if you're hungry, that's bad. And if you eat good food, that's good because you feel better. Or if you're tired and you rest, you feel better. If you're thirsty, you drink water and so on. Or we learn social realities that it feels better to have people like us than to have people hate us. It feels better to be praised than to be insulted. And so on and so forth. It feels better to be healthy than to be sick. So we learn these things and we try to produce pleasurable results and defend ourselves from painful results. And that's basically all that's going on down here in the Mahatattva. So that's the duality. Going for the gusto, going for the pleasurable results, and trying to avoid the bad things, pain. That's what we're doing. So therefore, we become attached to the results, positively and negatively. We become attached to good results, and we become negatively attached, which is called aversion. We develop a negative attachment to bad things. Now, because we're attached to this, we become bound to the material world because we're attached to getting something, pleasure, and avoiding pain. And therefore, we're busily at work, we're busily, diligently running around this world trying to do that. And that's our bondage. And therefore, Krishna says, the way to escape this is you have to take those fruits and give them to me. If you give them to me, then you'll actually be liberated. So now, that's what Krishna is talking about when he says tad vidhi. Then in chapter 4, he starts talking about all different kinds of sacrifice. That's what the tad stands for in the sentence tad vidhi. That. Tad is that. Learn that. Know that. In other words, this art of sacrifice. So tad vidhi pranipata, and you learn it pranipatena, pata. Pata in Sanskrit means falling, means to fall. Like patita pavana, saving the fallen. Patita means the fallen. So pata is the same word, a slightly different form. And ni means down, and pra is forward. So if you think of something falling down and forth, it's kind of like fume, like that. Confirmed. So that's what the word pranipata means. It means you fall forward and down, boom, like that. And so that's translated submission. Submission, literally falling at the feet of the person you're submitting to. Prashna, pari prashnena. Prashna means question, and pari is the Greek peri, like in perimeter, periscope. Pari means around, like parikram, walking around. And so, pari prashna means around questions. Now, what does that mean in Sanskrit? I mean, it doesn't. It means thorough questions. In other words, covering all the different points. Going all around, covering all the different points. Pari prashna. Not merely a question. Because if it just said prashnena, it would mean approach the guru and just ask him something. Okay, now you've done that. Now you can go on to the next. So it doesn't just mean approaching a guru and just asking something. Pari prashna. You have to cover all the points. Now, you don't have to ask about things you already know. Some people think it's a duty to ask questions, even if you already know the answer, just because it's rude not to ask a question and bother the guru. But actually, the word pari prashna means you ask questions until you really understand. And if there's something you don't understand, that's not pari. You haven't gone all around to all the points. There's a statement in the third canto of the Bhagavatam describing Vidura's dialogue with Maitreya. Is it Markand? Maitreya, and Maitreya Muni. He's called Maitreya because he's the son of Mitra. And at a certain point, it said about Vidura, Tebhyas Choparamaha. He stopped asking questions because he got it. He got it. He understood. So that's pari prashnena. And then sevaya, by service. By service. There's nothing more, what's the word? I don't want to say annoying.
Abhorrent.
Huh? No, I don't mean abhorrent. I sort of mean annoying. I can't say there's nothing more annoying, but it is, there are a certain class of disciples who ask all kinds of questions and even trivial questions of the guru, and basically want to take all kinds of services from the guru and don't really think about serving. We get these very long letters. Some people are sort of irrepressible autobiographers. But actually it said here, sevaya, there should be service. Because if we don't come to the point of thinking, how can I please the guru, we didn't get it. We didn't get it. If we're still thinking, ask not what I can do for the guru, ask what the guru can do for me. Or the guru's already happy, he's with Krishna, now how can I be happy? What can I do to make myself happy? Wrong question. It's a wrong question, first of all, because we won't be happy that way. If you could actually make yourself happy, it might be the right question, since everyone has a natural desire to be happy. But remember watering the root of the tree. We can only be happy because there is a type of... I mean, reality is sort of structurally like a tree. That's the point of the Bhagavatam. And reality has a root. Everything that exists has a root, and that's Krishna. So by watering the root, we're actually pursuing our enlightened self-interest, as Prahlad Maharaj points out, Natevidu Sartha Gatingi Vishnu. So, or putting food in the stomach. It's that old example. So asking the question, how can I please the spiritual master, is the right question, even if you are trying to literally be selfish. In other words, you're trying to really be happy yourself, it's still the right question. And if I'm asking the question, where will I be happy? Where, you know, what situation will really do it all for me now, given my present psychophysical existential situation? What really works for me now? As long as we keep asking these questions, we're It's going to be like that little hamster on the treadmill, little rat running around in the cage, producing electricity maybe. We're just going to produce a lot of anxiety. So now obviously when you say, what can I do for the guru, it's not that you have to denature yourself. It's not that you have no nature. Krishna clearly says repeatedly in the Bhagavad Gita that our duty comes from our nature. Sometimes there's a neophyte understanding which comes from thinking that ISKCON boot camp is Sanatan Dharma, where we think that, well, whatever, I'll just do whatever. I have no nature, so that my nature has to come from my duty. If it's my duty to cook, it has to be my nature to cook. If it's my duty to go out and sell something, it has to be my nature to go out and sell something, because that's what I was told to do. And if it's not, I don't feel like it's my nature, I'm obviously evil or something like that. So that's not our philosophy, by the way. That's not the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita. What Krishna actually says many times in the Bhagavad Gita is that even enlightened people, even people who get it, who understand, act according to their nature. That's in chapter 3. Sadrasham cheshtate swasya prakritir jnanavanapi. Even a person who understands Krishna consciousness still acts according to their nature. What will repression accomplish? All creatures follow their nature. So, of course, there is a period in our life when we just do the needful, and that's, we need that. We need to get trained. We need to learn that. But eventually, we have to have a career in Krishna consciousness, so that our duty comes from our nature. Not that our nature is supposed to come from our duty if we were really sincere. So, therefore, considering what our actual philosophy is, when we ask the question, how can I please the guru, the question has to be asked sanely. In other words, we have to ask that question within reasonable parameters, things that we are actually capable of doing. In other words, a sustainable service, something we can actually continue to do, because it doesn't violate our nature, which will then come out in some other way. Anyway, so sevaya, service, then upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninas tattva darshina. The tattva darshina, the seers of tattva, which is translated seers of the truth. The word tattva is a particular word in Sanskrit meaning truth, which refers to like Vishnu tattva, Jiva tattva, Prakriti tattva. So it means a categorical truth. The Vishnu category. To say Vishnu tattva means the Vishnu category, or the Jiva category. It means a categorical truth. And so what Krishna is saying here is you have to learn from people who have understood what is God, what is the soul, and what is nature. Krishna says in chapter 13, I consider knowledge to be knowledge of these three things, which there he calls the field, the knower of the field, and the supreme knower of the field. So, and the fact that Krishna juxtaposes these two words, jnanam, jnaninas, is not an accident. It didn't just happen to come out that way. The computer didn't just throw those two words together. Krishna is actually making a very powerful point, which in a sense is almost tautological. You could say it's obvious, but people don't get it a lot of the times. And Krishna is saying the knowers will give knowledge. Someone has to have knowledge to give knowledge. That's what Krishna is saying. Jnaninas literally means those who have knowledge. Those who have knowledge give knowledge. You have to have it to give it. And he says, upadekshanti. Literally, they will instruct you. The same word as upadesha, upadeshamrita, nectar of instruction. The word upadesha is the noun. Upadekshanti is the verb in the future. They will instruct. They will instruct knowledge to you, those who have knowledge, because they are tattva-darshina. They are seers of the truth. And again, Krishna says in chapter 13, he defines jnanam as being knowledge of the soul, God, and nature. And therefore the word tattva is used, because they know the tattvas. They have seen the tattvas. They have seen the nature of and the differences between God, the soul, and nature. God being Krishna, the soul being us, and nature, all that stuff that we're struggling with. So, Bhaktisiddhanta, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was a perfect spiritual master, an ideal spiritual master, full of all of the qualities of the Vaishnavas. Very learned, and everyone knows that he was a learned scholar. He turned down a university chair. He was quite learned and uncompromising. He had that purity, that innocence. You have to be pure to really... He was called Nrsinga Guru. And to really... They say sadhu means to cut. You really have to... In other words, who wants to lie down and go under the blade of an amateur surgeon? I mean, think about that. So sadhu means to cut, but amateur surgeons can be lethal. Like they say, the operation was a success, but the patient died. So the fact that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur could cut the way he did, the fact that he could do that, is because of his purity. If you actually are a trained surgeon, you know exactly how to cut, and you're not harming the patient, you're actually saving the patient. So to be able to be that strong, that forceful, to cut, and yet not harm anyone, only help other people, that alone says a lot about Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, about his purity. His external life was different from Prabhupada's. Prabhupada was a householder. He had five children. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was a Naishtika Brahmachari. And you see, both of them great souls, pure devotees. So there are these different paths. Bhaktisiddhanta was a Naishtika Brahmachari, lifelong brahmachari, and his translation style. Prabhupada actually followed his guru's translation style. As you may notice, Prabhupada in his translations puts often a good deal of the purport into the translation so that you can't miss the point. In other words, it's not a literal academic translation. This word means this, that word means that, so that you get a lot of words which are explaining the verse. And this was actually Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's style. If you look at his own Bhagavatam translation purports, which he wrote in Bengali, Bhaktisiddhanta did the Bhagavatam also, just like our Prabhupada. And he gave Sanskrit word for word. It's in Bengali script, but he gives a Sanskrit word for word, synonyms, Sanskrit synonyms, and then a Bengali translation and Bengali purport. And his style is the one that Prabhupada followed. And this style of explaining as you translate can be traced all the way, clearly it can be traced back to Sutta Goswami. There's at the end of, I think it's chapter 2, the first canto of the Bhagavatam, either chapter 2 or chapter 3, perhaps chapter 2, the end of that chapter. Sutta Goswami says that I heard from my own spiritual master Sukha, and I shall now make you hear it. Literally, I shall now make you hear it. He says to Parikshit, to sages at Naimi Sharanya, yatha ditam yathamati. Tatra kirtiyato vipra viparse bhuri tejasas, and so on. I heard my spiritual master, and I shall now explain it to you literally. Yatha ditam, literally in Sanskrit means literally. I shall now explain to you what I heard literally and yathamati, according to my own realization. According to my own realization. So this style of giving the literal meaning plus one's own realization can be directly traced historically back to Sutta speaking to the sages at Naimisharanya. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used this style, and so did Prabhupada. Any questions? Yes. Oh, we have the talk show format. The microphone. No fights break out, do they? Talk show. It's not that kind of talk show.
Thank you, Maharaj, for nice class. You said that if you perform duty, then you will... if you don't have your nature and you think, then if you perform duty, then you will come up your nature will come up, then it's actually wrong. You first have to know your nature, and after that, perform your duty. But how actually, you mean a spiritual nature, like already?
And material nature.
Material nature.
Yes.
How you will know that, you know, you're...
It requires some degree of purification. Because many of us, before we came to Krishna consciousness, were extremely unregulated. Or regulated in the wrong way. The result of that is that when material passion becomes strong, we have sinful desires, it becomes difficult to understand one's own nature, because you may think, I want that. And it may not be your nature. For example, sometimes when people attempt to find their soulmates, the partner of their life, and as we know, or as people should know if they're old enough, if there's too much lust or infatuation, you choose the wrong person. That's why there's such an extraordinary divorce rate nowadays, because people are obviously making stupid decisions. And the reason we make stupid decisions is because our desire is too strong. And so even to understand one's own nature, you have to sort of calm down a bit. And that's why it's a perfect process that we find in Vedic culture, or really, and it's not just Vedic culture, really throughout all mature civilizations, that on the spiritual path, first there is boot camp. First you join the Hare Krishna movement, and especially if you join it in a situation where you're able to live in an ashram. Some people aren't in that situation, but if you are able to, or even people, let's say, that live outside or householders, often they'll come and just humbly do whatever they're asked to do. And so that's good, because adoshadata tat sadhu sangha, first there's faith and association with devotees, then bhajana kriya, devotional activities, and anartha nibritti, we start to get free of our bad habits. And you have to reach a certain level of anartha nibritti, of becoming free from our bad habits, before you really are in touch with yourself, so that you're not faked out by your own heavy desires. There has to be a certain degree of decency and purity to really clearly understand yourself, even to clearly understand your material nature, because the body can get very excited and very greedy and lusty and proud, but that's not the same thing as your nature. Your nature is something much more stable and permanent, and it's just different. That's not necessarily your nature. So it requires a certain degree of purification or practice to really make an intelligent decision about your nature. Yes.
Restricting yourself to the varnas and ashrams that are described in the Vedic literature, or are you broadening it to today's modern conception of what nature is?
Well, the varna, first of all, Krishna talks about nature. When Krishna says your duty comes from your nature in the Bhagavad Gita, he's specifically referring to varna. And if you just look at chapter 18, you'll see this very clearly. But the varnas are complete life situations. So in other words, it's not like, well, I'm inclined to be a Vaishya or a Kshatriya or Brahmana, but then I have all my other natures. No. Varna, because if you were a Kshatriya, Brahmana, Vaishya, Shudra, there was a whole lifestyle associated with it. And there were all kinds of duties. And so it's a lifestyle, not just a job. I think that's important to understand. It's not just a job. The varna is a lifestyle. It's a whole subculture. And so if you're rightly situated in your varna and ashram, you're really rightly situated. Everything else is just like a bunch of footnotes, maybe, little details. I don't know what the modern conception of nature is. I can't imagine what else it could be. I mean, what else would be what else could reasonably fit in that category of nature?
Discussing people who, influenced by the New Age, they think, because they're maybe a little bit in the mode of goodness, they think that they can lead others, and know, so people are really confused about their nature. They think they can lead others. They think that whatever they do is okay. You know, there's all kinds of conceptions.
But that's not
nature.
But I would call that vanity, not nature. If someone is inclined to be a teacher, that's their nature, to be a teacher. However, if they impatiently or presumptuously or vainly teach before they really have knowledge or claim to know more than they know, that's not nature. That's just vanity and foolishness. So that they're performing their vocation, but in an imperfect way due to vanity. Anything else? Yes, back there.
Doesn't it take a certain amount of satisfaction to know who you really are and to perform devotional service and to ask proper questions?
Well, we learn a lot by dissatisfaction also. We do a lot of things that don't satisfy us, and so we start to eliminate things. So if you do something and there's a deep satisfaction, in the sense that this is really what I should be doing, this is me, this is what I'm meant to do, this is what I was born to do, that satisfaction has to be there in order to find your real duty. And now, if we're not satisfied, though, we don't just sort of randomly browse around. But let's say, for example, I'm practicing bhakti yoga, but I'm not satisfied. I have to be intelligent enough to figure out why I'm not satisfied. What if I'm practicing poorly? What if I'm chanting in a sloppy way? What if I am offending other people? What if, you know, there's a whole long list. So just to come to the simple or simplistic conclusion, I'm practicing this, I'm not satisfied. You have to figure out why you're not satisfied intelligently and then fix it. Anything else? Yes.
Jerry, I haven't seen you for 25 years.
How you been?
Well, I've been out there. I've been preaching a little bit God consciousness as much as I can, but it's time for me to come back into the temple, and now I'm in this temple. And now I need you back as my spiritual master, if that's a possibility.
No problem.
My nature is I'm a Sudra. I can do all construction. Devotees last night said, you're coming into town and they need your house cleaned. And I said, I'll do it, no problem. Then I guess they went and did it already.
Yeah, we can discuss it after the class.
Okay, but anyway.
That may not be pertinent to everybody. Yeah, but we'll talk about that.
Okay, thank you very much, Charlie.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
So on that happy note, I'm sorry I can't release you to your breakfast, but... Anyway, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Prabhupada ki jai.